You are listening to Podcasters of Horror, a podcast about exploring horror anthologies from film and TV, as part of the Super Network, with your hosts, Super Marcy.
And he just gave off, like, very creepy vibes, so you're always very unsure of this guy.
And the terrible Australian, Beat Germine.
Which, in that version, it's a Krusty the Clown doll that's harassing Homer.
This podcast may contain coarse language.
It just kept getting weirder and weirder, and what the f*** is up with this house?
Adult themes.
You know, she's only just a little girl, but he really is very mean to her.
And potential spoilers.
Spoiler alert.
Listener discretion is advised. For more information, please visit supermarcy.com or see the show notes. To show your support, you can join us on Patreon at patreon.com/thesupernetwork. Please enjoy the show.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another installment of Podcasters of Horror, the horror anthology podcast right here at the Super Network. I am your host, Super Marcy, and this is episode 25. And if you remember, a few months ago, we did an episode covering a couple of episodes from The Twilight Zone. And we are back for the Halloween season to discuss some horror anthology films. And I'm not alone, obviously, for this podcast. I'm joined by my regular co-host. He is the terrible Australian, Mr. Bede Germine. Hello, Bede. How are you doing?
I'm good, thanks, Marcy. How are you?
Doing all right. Very happy to be back doing some more Podcasters of Horror.
Indeed. I'm also very excited as well because this is our special spooktacular edition of the show, because not only are we talking about two horror anthology films, they are both set at Halloween, which I'm very excited about, given the season we're in at the moment.
Yes, a very good double feature for Halloween or the Halloween season, and we'll get to that momentarily. We are also joined by a very special guest who is part of the Super Network, and I believe they have not been on Podcasters of Horror before, so it's very exciting. Please welcome Marcus Woolturner. Hello, how are you?
I'm good. How are you guys doing? I'm back on another podcast. I know I just can't stay away.
And we can't keep you away because we always love having you on podcasts.
Exactly. Whether it be like ones for the Super Network or our own individual solo podcast.
Oh yeah, man. I love coming back over here and just talking and ranting with you fine Aussies. So thank you again for having me. Thank you again for having me on here. This will be my first time on Podcasters of Horror. So thank you very much for the opportunity. I cannot wait to get into this.
Indeed. I'm very excited that you're here, Marcus, and that this is your first time on Podcasters of Horror, and you picked a really good episode to appear on, because, Marcy, which two Halloween-themed horror anthology films are we doing for this episode of the show? Which is, since it's episode 25, it's a milestone episode for this show?
Yes, we've reached 25 episodes from a podcast that just started with looking at episodes, or every episode of the horror anthology series Masters of Horror, and then we went on to Fear Itself, and so far we've covered all sorts of other horror anthology things, so you can always look forward to us discussing horror anthology movies or horror anthology TV shows. And yes, so for this episode, we'll be looking at 2007's Trick or Treat and 2015's Tales of Halloween.
Indeed. And I'm very excited to talk about these ones. Again, not just because they're both Halloween related, because there's a lot of stuff in both films to talk about. And they're both, I guess, spoilers for what I think of all of them, are both very fun anthologies.
Yeah, spoiler alert, Bede.
I'm sorry. I apologize. I gave it all away. I guess
you gave it all away. Get out. No, just kidding.
All right, I better go. Anyways.
Well, let's kick off the discussion with Trick or Treat.
This is the one night.
Don't forget your costume.
All sorts of things. Roam free.
Halloween School Bus Massacre.
Daddy!
this one, I think we find either horror anthologies have many directors and writers involved, or maybe just the one. And in this case, it is just the one. It was directed, but written and directed, I should say, by Michael Dougherty. And this one has quite a cast throughout the film, with Anna Paquin, Brian Cox, Dylan Baker, Rochelle Ites. I can't say your name. I'm sorry. Quinn Lord, Lauren D. Smith, Monica Dillon, I've met the guy and I can't say his name, Tamoa Pennicott, Brett Kelly, and Leslie Bibb. And there's definitely a lot more in that cast. And I'm going to read the synopsis that is visible on IMDb. Five interwoven stories that occur on Halloween. An everyday high school principal has a secret life as a serial killer. A college virgin might have just met the guy for her. A group of teens pull a mean prank. A woman who loathes the night has to contend with her holiday-obsessed husband. And a mean old man meets his match with a demonic supernatural trick-or-treater. Now, normally, I would just send off the conversation to somebody else, but I'm going to start with me, with my overall thoughts on the film before we get into just discussing other bits and stuff that we liked. I saw Trick or Treat, when it was released. It was very hyped up. Lots of people were loving the film, and I sat down to watch it, and I think just overhyping it maybe in my head, I just thought it was meh. It was okay. I didn't think as highly of it as other people, and that made me a little bit of the bead, whereas I had a bad take, as people would say. No. I'm kidding, of course. And I hadn't seen it since until we decided to add this to the podcast. And on rewatch, like, this film really hit the spot for me. I really, really enjoyed it this second time around, this fresh viewing. I noticed just so many more things that I didn't really pick up on, and things that didn't work actually like won me over, and I just really embraced and enjoyed the film. Marcus, what are your initial thoughts on Trick or Treat?
Well, I hadn't seen it before. But I've always like heard about it from, you know, plenty of other, you know, critics and podcasters and, you know, lovers of horror and Halloween and everything like that. But I never really got around to seeing it. Actually, I never got around to seeing Tales of Halloween either. So it was interesting to kind of experience this for the first time, because you hear so much about it and people just, every time I used to tell people I haven't seen it yet, the very first thing that pops in their heads is, well, what's wrong with you? And, you know, nothing's wrong. I watch plenty of anthology films, plenty of my faves, but I just hadn't really gotten around to seeing this. So finally taking a peek at it, you know, for this podcast, I got to say, it's definitely very festive. And it's, you know, I can see why it earned like the title and status and moniker that it has today, because these stories are just heavily like Halloween themed to the point where you could see why so many people come back to it over and over again, especially, you know, during, you know, this time of year and, you know, the tradition, the sacred holiday of it all. So, you know, watching this, you know, I really got sucked up into, you know, the season, you know, quite well, which is interesting to me because, you know, I've been watching horror movies all month. And all the horror movies I've seen have been either, you know, great, fantastic, or meh. But this one really made me feel like it was, you know, the season. You know, it made me feel just completely immersed in the season in every way. I liked it. You know, I liked it a lot. I don't know if I love it, but I did like it. I liked a lot of what it had to say, a lot of what it's shown, a lot of the kind of the traditions of the holiday, the rules, quote unquote, of the holiday. Sam is awesome. I know we're going to get into that, but
oh yeah,
I can see why it's, like I said, like I can see why it's earned its status, you know, in horror and anthology, you know, because anthology movies have really shown or seen, I should say, a righteous like resurgence in the last decade, probably more than that, you know, So we've been seeing like so many like great entries coming out, and the fact that this one still stands where it is extremely impressive. So I definitely had a great time with it.
Awesome. And Pete, what are your initial thoughts on Trick or Treat?
Well, I've been a big fan of this movie ever since it came out, but even before then, like when I first heard about it, I just had a feeling it was going to be right up my alley. Because the interesting thing about this film and the cult status that it has achieved over the years is mainly for the fact because it was originally meant to come out like a wide release in October 2007, but then Warner Brothers took it off the release schedule. And basically after that, it kind of just popped up here and there at the occasional film festival. And then it just went straight to DVD 2 years later in 2009, which I think, because I know for even around that time when the movie was first announced and the cast and everyone who was involved with it were being put together, like I knew a lot of horror fans were very excited for this film. And the fact that it kind of, again, sort of didn't get released for 2 years and then just ended up going straight to DVD definitely sort of hyped everyone up for it. When I sat down to watch that, one of the first things I will admit when I first sat down to watch it, and I actually blind bought this when this came out, is that I was actually very surprised by the short running time it had, because it was like, it's at least 80 minutes long. And I just assumed, given that it's kind of an anthology film, it's going to be a lot longer. But the fact that it was 80 minutes, I was a little concerned by, but when I sat down to watch it, all those kind of problems went away very quickly, because all the stories are all individually really solid in their own way. And I think the thing that makes Trick or Treat sort of stand out compared to other anthology horror films, especially ones we've covered on this show, Marcy, is the fact that, you know, most of the time it'll just like stick to one story, and then once that finishes, it goes on to the next story. But Michael Dougherty, and mind you, this was his directorial debut as well, he came up with an interesting idea of taking more of this non-linear approach to the story by making it basically like the Pulp Fiction of Halloween films, where you go back and forth between all the individual stories and you can actually see how they're all linked together. Like some of them don't actually happen at the same time. Some of them happen like earlier in the evening, some happen later in the evening, and it kind of crosses back and forth. And the great thing is, though, every time I watch this film, I always pick up something new. Or like if you look in certain scenes, you'll see a character who was introduced earlier or later in the film is just walking past in the background. And I just think it's really clever on how that was done, but and the attention to detail that Michael Dougherty does for this. And just to show, like, I'm still picking up things even now in this most recent viewing, because I've seen this movie quite a number of times over the years, is that for the first, I'd never noticed this until when I rewatched the film again yesterday, is that the zombie kids who are a part of the film in a story actually show up at the very beginning of the film, because when Leslie Bibb's character is kind of looking across the street and she sees that guy in the mask staring at her, and she's creeped out by it, you can actually see them walking in the background.
I did not pick up on that. I picked up on a lot of things on this watch, I have to say.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. I didn't even pick up on it either until I, again, watched it in prep for this show. And that's the amazing thing about this film, is like Michael Dougherty, like I said, he put so much thought into the narrative of this film. Like, you're still picking up little things here and there, even like years later after this film has come out. But without that out of the way, I do love the film. I think it is a lot of fun. Like I said, I think that all the stories themselves on their own are solid, but I think when you kind of combine them together in this kind of almost Pulp Fiction-esque narrative, it definitely elevates it as well. And I think the stories themselves are a lot of fun. And I like that Michael Dougherty goes all out with embracing Halloween. Like, we've seen a ton of horror films that take place at Halloween, but this is the one where I feel like not only aesthetically it goes all out with everything Halloween, but it really even dives into the traditions and the rituals and the meanings behind Halloween and where it came from, because you can definitely tell he has a lot of love for this holiday And it shines for you in this film. And also he kind of mixes it up by giving us so many different subgenres in this film. Like, this is a film that features werewolves and zombies and serial killers and vampires and monsters and so much stuff like descending on this town on Halloween night. And I think, and it's a shame that, I mean, that's the thing I always keep wondering about. Like, if this movie had did come out in cinemas, I honestly think it probably wouldn't have done well, but I still think regardless whether it did come out in cinemas and flop, or, you know, as it did come out eventually on DVD, I still reckon this film would have had a cult following anyway. And it definitely has, like, you know, 14 years later after its release. And it's a film that still holds up incredibly well, too.
And yeah, like, I was going to mention, but you mentioned it anyway, that it did kind of get delayed. And I think that delay built up a lot of anticipation and hype, because I remember, you know, we all used to frequent like Arrow in the Head and stuff like that. That's basically how we all met each other, because we're movie nerds and that was the place we used to go to. Like, I remember the stories, I'd read the news articles, like, oh, it's going to finally come out, and, you know, being very excited. And then for me back then, like, it just didn't click with me. And I think, you know, who I am as a person and my tastes have obviously changed a little bit, and dare I say matured in a way since then. And just like actually just being away from all of that and just sitting to watch it again and like just really embracing and taking in so much. As you said, like for both of you, you said like it's a very Halloween-y movie because it embraces that day, and it really does. And I really, really appreciate that, especially being from a country that Halloween has not really been much of a thing. Like the past few years, they've tried to get it to be bigger, and it's fun for me to see something like that. But also, I kind of wish we got to like go trick-or-treating as kids and do all that stuff, but maybe not in this particular town. Things seem to be going a bit shit there. but yeah, to continue on with some discussion on the film, as a horror anthology film, this doesn't have like wraparound segments. It's just interweaving the stories between each other. So do you like how this approached it? Do you think it would have been better with the wraparound segments? What do you think, Marcus?
Honestly, I think this is one of the best strengths that the film has. I mean, most of the time when we like look at anthology movies, there normally is like an encompassing like story that kind of gives the other stories a chance to kind of come in. But there's really only one that kind of like goes throughout the whole entire thing. And, you know, this one, there's really no need for that. I mean, everything having to do with each of these stories, they're so like intertwined with each other. They're so like within each other and then on the outer rings of each other. As you put it earlier, you know, we see so many characters from each segment in the background. You know, walking by, or, you know, getting a moment where they're looking at something else that's happening with a different character from a different segment. Everything is so enveloped in this. It works so well. Like, it really does. Like, you know, I'll mention him again. I know we're going to talk about him. Like, Sam is like one of the big themes that just go throughout all of these. But he's not the only one. You know, we have, I guess you would say, the rules of Halloween are being either like ignored or disrespected in some kind of way. I'm trying to remember what the rules were. Oh yeah, the rules were always wear a costume and always hand out candy, never blow out a jack-o'-lantern before midnight, and respect the dead. So that, amongst everything else, is something that's just like shown throughout this entire film and all these segments, you know, in some manner or some kind of way. And it's a big reminder of, I guess you could say, Daugherty's, I probably said his name wrong. Daugherty. Of Daugherty's talent for being able to, you know, intersperse all of these segments together in a way that feels very organic, very natural. very in keeping with the tradition, in keeping with the season, in keeping, you know, the night in question. So, I mean, this works incredibly well. So I don't think if they would have cut these, separated these, it would have made it, it would have had the same feel to it as, you know, it does now. It would have felt very, almost probably a little discombobulated.
Yeah.
You know?
That's the word I would have used. I think it would have been a bit of a disservice to have done that because it's actually just been crafted so well to just make it like an interweaving story.
Yeah, and you don't want that. You know, you want to be able for people to watch this film and get sucked in the right way. And that's what it does. And this is one of the reasons why it does that.
Yes. Bede, any thoughts on that or anything else you'd like to bring up about the film?
Oh, there's a lot of things to bring up. And I think one of the things that kind of what stands out to me about this film is, of course, the performances from the cast. And I like the fact that really kind of the only real big names in this film are basically Brian Cox. And one of my favorite trivia is about Brian Cox's appearance in this film, that he actually based his appearance on John Carpenter, which actually I find pretty hilarious. and also Anna Paquin and Dylan Baker, and Leslie Bibb. But after that, it's kind of mostly, I guess, lesser known actors or actors who aren't that well known. And I think having sort of a cast, a kind of mixture of a couple of familiar faces and others who aren't as well known kind of really adds to the great feel to this film. And I think everybody just does a great job with this performance. But at the same time, though, and I think what's also great as well is the character of Sam, who we'll definitely talk about a lot very soon, being like this kind of spirit of Halloween who kind of goes back and forth between the individual stories in an interesting kind of way. When you kind of think of it, he almost could also be like our crypt keeper in a way. Like, he doesn't say anything at all throughout the film, but he's always there either at the beginning of a story or at the end of a story. So it's almost like once he's there, then it kind of goes off to a different story. And yeah, I think it's pretty interesting way on how Doherty kind of tackles the anthology film, but does it in a unique spin to kind of, again, making it more into these interconnected stories. But at the same time, kind of even changing things around that we associate with horror anthology films and kind of doing his own thing with it.
And I mean, we should probably get into talking about Sam, who is on all the promotional material, the most well-known thing from this film. And see, on my first watch, I didn't really like Sam. Not so much that I didn't like Sam. I'm like, I just don't buy it, I guess. I just thought, this little thing, like, what the fuck? You can't fuck up people. Like, you're nothing, dude. But like, you know, that was a younger Marcy, I suppose. This time around, I felt like it worked. And I did notice him a lot more in kind of the background and stuff with the other segments. And also this time around, I think Sam is not only freaking adorable, like I'd put Sam in my handbag. He can just sit with me. And if anyone pisses me off, I'll unleash Sam. Like, he's totally little adorable. But he also is like Denny from The Room, because he just likes to watch you guys doing pretty much everything. So I kind of have to be won over now. But yeah, like this time I felt more of that presence and the threat that Sam has. And it's like, maybe you should just obey the rules of Halloween and, you know, you don't have to deal with him doing very awful things. But yeah, over to you guys. How do you feel about Sam? Marcus?
Oh, man. He is such a little precocious little scamp. You know, it's funny you mentioned Denny, because every time I saw Sam in this movie, I was like, oh, hi, Sam. You know, I could not help myself. Like, he...
Oh, hi.
Exactly. I mean, he is... It's wild, because I actually knew about Sam before I even knew about this movie, because he has become such an icon in his own right to the point where I see him on like so many posters and promotions, and I see him next to, you know, Ghostface and Pinhead and Leatherface and Freddy and Jason and Candyman. You know, it's wild because he's only in one movie. Just to have him be at that status already, you know, is wild. And when I first like popped in this movie, I didn't think he was really going to be all that prevalent, but surprise, surprise, he really is. Like, he's like I believe I said this in my little review for this movie. He's like an observer, purveyor, and just a lurking harbinger of death. He's always around in some kind of fashion, like looking at nearly everything. I mean, he is basically like Denny. He does love to watch, but unlike Denny, if you do something, you know, fucked up, or you, you know, mess up one of the rules, here he comes. And he's very like destructive and mischievous, and he dishes out very merciless punishment. But then when you do what you're supposed to do, he's very friendly. He nods at you. He walks around and very unassuming. And I think that's what is one of the main reasons why he's so important to this movie, to the story, but why he reached the status that he reached, because he's pretty much everything you can think of when it comes to the nature of Halloween. You know, something playful yet scary, something unassuming yet devastating, and something that really just is like the symbol of the season. And you know, I absolutely like loved him. I really did. I didn't think I would, but I really did. He's you know, he's such a little demon spawn. I love him.
Little Sam wins you all over in the end.
Yes,
he really does.
Actually, another thing I want to talk about is back to the cast. One cast member who I think really kind of stands out a lot with their performances, Dylan Baker. You can tell he's having way too much fun as this serial killer school principal. And I think I love about most of this film, it's one of those films that has that 80s vibe, even though it's not an 80s film. So it has a good balance of horror, but it also has a lot of dark humor.
It has very dark humor. Like, I like how it subverts what you're expecting in a clever way. Like, with the Dylan Baker character with his son, like, to go carve a pumpkin, and you think, oh, shit, he's going to kill his kid. No, the kid's going to carve out, like, the kid from earlier's, like, head. So the kid is, like, this serial killer in, like, training. And it's, oh shit, like moments like that are like shocking, darkly funny, and a little disturbing.
Indeed. And I forgot, like, the kid that Dylan Baker kills earlier is the kid from Bad Santa.
Bad Santa. I'm like, that's totally the Bad Merman. Santa kid.
Merman.
Exactly. But also, I gotta say this though. Like, if there's one little criticism I have about this movie, is the entire section with Anna Paquin and her sister and friends, when, like, once you watch the film, because you find out, like, they're in town for the night, they're going to go dress up as kind of quote unquote slutty, like, fairy tale characters, and they're gonna go to party and sleep with guys and whatnot. And then you find out, like, that they're actually werewolves. Like, every time I watch this film and, like, I watch all their scenes together, it's like Michael Dougherty is not subtle with the foreshadowing of them being werewolves.
Oh, it's so there. And I don't think I, like, quite picked up on how on the nose it is.
Mm.
And that did make me laugh this time. And I have to say, like, I think the werewolf section, like, when it really takes off and stuff, and we see their insane transformation, like, that's some of my favorite stuff in the film. They are werewolves, but they rip the human skin off And it's madness. Like, it's so well done. And the fact that this segment brings back in Dylan Baker, who's going to get, you know, he's one of the victims. It was very clever.
And also, like, you don't know it's him at first because you think, oh, there's this dude going around biting and attacking women. Oh, it's a vampire. Mm. We all assume it's a vampire. But then, of course, once the mask is taken off and it's Dylan Baker, I think the first time I watched this film, I was actually surprised. But now knowing it is Dylan Baker, it's like, oh, yeah, I can definitely see, like, his eyes and his chin and stuff like that. It's like, it's obviously him. But it is clever on how the movie does subvert our expectations, especially on that first viewing. And I agree with you, Marcy, like with what I was saying before that, yeah, the dialogue between Anna Paquin and the girls is so on the nose with the werewolf references or wolf references and stuff like that. But the thing is, though, when I first watched this film the first time, you don't really pick up on it. And it's like when you look back on it and watch it, it's like, it's so on the nose. Why didn't I pick up on this before?
Yeah, I can confirm that. That's kind of how I felt. I knew something was off with them, but I just didn't. Honestly, my guess was they were going to be like parasites or succubuses or something like that, or witches, actual witches, you know. So you're right about it being on the nose, but kind of like, you don't pick up on it because the problem with this is, well, not the problem, but the thing about it is you at this time during the film, you kind of are looking for people who are going to be victims. And it doesn't like tell you right off the bat, like who's going to be who, you know, that's a part of the surprise. So I'm sitting here waiting for, you know, these girls to get attacked by something, but lo and behold, they're the ones doing the attacking.
Exactly. And I also got to say, though, like, we also have, like, the other story in the film, which I have it right here, because they do actually have each of the stories, like, what the titles of each segment is called. Like, there is a section in the story called the Halloween School Bus Massacre, which, of course, is like a group of kids going to this ravine and to deliver pumpkins for some kids.
I just want to, like, jump in slightly. Like,
yes.
I think the clever thing about this film is that each story really does intertwine, and we find out how this particular story with the bus ties into another segment we get a little bit later. And
indeed,
when I was watching, I'd forgotten that connection. I'm like, oh, duh. But anyway, continue.
Yes. But again, it's another sort of a case where a group of kids are basically playing a horrible mean prank on
fuck
a kid.
Those bully little shits.
And also, I got to say, though, like when you hear the story of like what happened to like they tell the urban legend of the Halloween school bus massacre, and like it definitely plays out like an urban legend the way how it is. Like, there are things that's like, why would parents of these poor, you know, kids who have mixture of who are mentally challenged or physical disabilities and all that, basically they just want to kill them off so they don't have to worry about any of this.
It's very dark. Like, it's like, why, like, doesn't matter what is like up with your kid. Like, are you gonna send a group of them to be killed? The only way I think you could justify it is say your kid was Damien and the son of the devil. But like, come on, it really wants to like hit you hard when they're like, well, these kids were not like ordinary kids. And it's like, oh, what the fuck is wrong with these parents and this town?
Indeed.
20.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. Although I got to say, though, the kids' costumes are terrifying.
Creepy. They're so creepy.
There's one in particular that stands out. It's just basically one of the kids having a paper bag over their head, but they got pictures of like mouths and eyes on it. And I just found that one so unnerving compared to the rest of them.
Yeah, I definitely remember that one. Jesus Christ.
They have very freaky costumes.
Yes. But of course, like the bullies get their comeuppance, as these type of stories usually do. So, like you say, Marcy, fuck them kids.
Fuck those little shits.
Exactly, exactly. And also we have the last story, which is definitely the longest one, and it's the one where we kind of stay with the longest out of all the other stories in the film, is the one with Mr. Krieg, played by Brian Cox, who gets a visit from Sam, and it basically turns into... Like, this is definitely the most 80s horror out of all the ones we... Out of all the stories in style and tone, especially.
Do you know what it kind of reminded me of? A little bit? Like, when in Pet Sematary with Judd and Gage, like, how they have this, like, little battle. It kind of reminded me of that, but just, more to it, obviously.
Yeah.
I think that's kind of like it reminds, like, maybe that was an inspiration. I don't know, but I
think
had visions of that. So,
yeah,
and
well,
see, that's something I picked up on. And my next, this watch, because I paid attention and I wasn't listening to insane hype. But anyway, I keep interrupting. I apologize.
That's all right. That's all right. But yeah, like that whole scene, I would even say it even reminded me a little bit a lot of Gremlins as well, just in this section in particular. With, like, you know, Brian Cox, like, fighting Sam, it gets really vicious at points. So, like, you say, one point, his little candy cane, which has got to be really sharp, like, with that candy cane, whatever it is. Anyways.
Lollipop thing?
Lollipop, yeah, that's it, a lollipop. it's like he cuts his tendon and then he bites him and, like, it is a great sequence, and Brian Cox is fantastic in this section, and it's a very physical performance from him as well. And then, of course, we get the kind of a little twist at the end as we find out that Brian Cox's character, Mr. Krieg, was the one who drove the bus in that we saw earlier.
He was the one who apparently the parents paid very well to kill their children. And it does hint when they tell, like, when they're retelling this urban legend, like, nobody knows what happened to the bus driver, but we see, like, despite things not going how it was planned, like, the bus goes off the cliff, but he manages to swim away. And we do see the zombie of those kids attack the little shit bully kids, and the girl who's dressed as a witch who they were playing the prank on originally is the one that gets away. And I'm like, good for her. Fuck the rest of them, seriously.
Talk about revenge, it sure is sweet.
Exactly.
Yes. And another cool thing to mention quickly, like the start of the film where we see like the married couple and Leslie Bibb's character like puts out the lantern, and then we see that she gets killed in her front yard. But that ties back into Sam at the end after he's done what he's done with Brian Cox. We see that he was the one that actually killed her because he saw her put out the lantern. And
Before midnight.
And I realized at the beginning she had something in her mouth. And then I'm like, oh, it was the lollipop thing. Mm. So it kind of hints to you that it was Sam.
Yes.
And again, like, we get that tie back when we find out Brian Cox's character was the bus driver, because the zombie kids come back to his house 30 years later. They waited for that right time for revenge after he was slightly reformed by giving candy to trick-or-treaters.
Indeed. Indeed. But I love the opening with Leslie Bibb, because, like, her character, like, really hates Halloween. And it's like, really? I mean, you just got home. Why even take down all the decorations so quickly? And there's so many. What is wrong with you?
Why would you spend all night taking down your decorations?
Exactly.
She looked particularly bitter to me. Like, she was very bitter.
That's why the movie never really hits, like, because definitely something happened with those two when they were out and about, but we never know what it is. So obviously she's kind of annoyed or pissed off about something. So,
well, we see them constantly bump into people. Maybe that just pissed her off. She didn't want to bump into everybody.
Well, that's the thing. That party in the street had a ton of people there. So I can imagine, like, she probably got annoyed by that.
I mean, I know I would have been annoyed, but I still would have followed the Halloween rules.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Exactly.
Yeah, because me and Sam will be buddies, because I'm going to keep him in my little handbag. He's so adorable.
Marcy, can Freddy dress up as Sam for Halloween to say?
I don't know how I could manage to do that. I will say I was out shopping last night and Aldi are selling Halloween dog costumes and they did have a dog Chucky costume, but I couldn't bring myself to get it for Freddy.
Next time.
I think that could wrap up our conversation on Trick or Treat. We'll have the opportunity to say anything else we wanted to, obviously, and give our ratings out of 5. I'll go first. Again, I'm reformed now. I really enjoyed Trick or Treat and had a lot of fun with it and just really enjoyed the vibe and just how everything really tied together. And it's almost because we kind of, you know, over the past few years, we have watched quite a few horror anthologies and the like for the podcast. It was refreshing to have something that wasn't with wraparound segments, like the actual whole story just intertwined together while still being a really cool horror anthology. So I give this 4 Little Sams in my purse out of 5. Yeah, this movie has really won me over and it might become a bit of a tradition to start watching it every Halloween, you know, like 14 years later. Yeah, Marcus, final thoughts and rating for Trick or Treat.
You know, it's funny you say that, you know, this will be a tradition before you going forward because ironically, and it just popped in my mind just now, I watch another like Michael Dougherty film every year around this time, and that's Krampus. So I absolutely love that movie. So I watch it every year around this time. So, you know, I thank you for reminding me of doing that because I'm definitely going to do that. But it's interesting thinking about that movie and how just broad and scary and fun it is. And then I go backwards a little bit and then we talk about this one. You know, as I said earlier, you know, the anthology subgenre has sparked such a huge resurgence over the last decade, probably a little bit more so. What was once kind of like a framing device that was attempted ever so often in the horror has now like come back in such a huge, broad, full swing. You know, it's brought about so many great, you know, executions, so many great projects and features. You know, we could probably make a list if we wanted to, but it's all been just one exceptional thing after another, one exceptional segment after another, and it's been pretty incredible, especially when you get the ones that have consistent, constant scares, stick to their themes, have so many great moments, great cast, great effects, music, the whole nine. I mean, you have yourself an undeniable gem. And that's exactly what this is. I'm going to change what I said earlier. I said I liked it. I don't know if I love it. I do love it. I do love this movie because it's everything you could want from an anthology film, everything you could want from a film based off of the season, everything you could want from, you know, balancing the mild to scary scares, the fun to the highly disturbing moments, great cast, and Sam just brings it all together by being the little skimper that he is. So, you know, I positively love this movie, and I think I may add this to the rotation every year as well, right along with Krampus. I will give it a 4.5 out of 5.
Nice.
Very nice. And Beat.
I'm going to give it 4.5 out of 5 as well. I think it is a lot of fun. It is extremely well made. The cast all do a great job. And just like John Carpenter's classic Halloween, this is definitely a staple every year if I fit it into my 31 days of horror. And they do make a great double feature. And it's just a lot of fun. Like, I think there's a reason why this film is a cult favorite. And when you watch it, it's hard not to understand why. It's just an absolute blast from beginning to end. Like, a part of me still wishes it was a tad little bit longer. You know, just for me, But other than that, it's just a great time, and I do love this movie a lot.
Yeah. If you haven't seen it, check it out. If it's been a while, and maybe you were like me, you're a bit unsure about it, watch it again. It is so worth it. And we'll get to our next film, which is Tales of Halloween.
Every year on Halloween, this town goes batshit crazy.
Trick or treat.
So this one's tagline pretty much says it all. One night, one town, 10 chilling stories. So we have a lot of stories, segments, directors, writers. So what I will do first, the very short synopsis from IMDb says 10 stories are woven together by their shared theme of Halloween night in an American suburb where ghouls, imps, aliens, and axe murderers appear for one night only to terrorize unsuspecting residents. So I will give a brief, just go through the titles of all the segments and who did them. The first segment is Sweet Tooth, which was written and directed by Dave Parker. The Night Billy Raised Hell was written by Clint Sears and directed by Darren Lynn Bousman. Trick, written by Greg Commons and directed by Adam Geek. How do you say his name?
Garash, I think.
Garash, yeah. Apologize for that. The Weak and Wicked, written by Molly Millions and directed by Paul Sollett. Grim Grinning Ghost, written and directed by Axel Carolyn. Ding Dong, written and directed by Lucky McKee. This Means War, written and directed by Andrew Cash and John Skip. Friday the 31st, written by Mike Mendez and Dave Parker, directed by Mike Mendez. The Ransom of Rusty Rex, written and directed by Ryan Schifrin. And Bad Seed, written and directed by Neil Marshall. The wraparound segment features Adrian Barbeau as a DJ. So we don't see her, we hear her. Each of these shorts have a massive cast, whether they're cameos or people in the whole segments. Like, there are points where you will see, like, John Landis is in a segment, Mick Garris and I think Stuart Gordon appear in a segment. Like, there's just so many cameos and lots of horror callbacks to this one. So I'll switch things around. Beat, just your, I guess, initial thoughts of the film as a whole as we begin the discussion.
You know what? I'm just going to say this. Like, having rewatched this film and also Trick or Treat, they are actually good.
They're very similar.
They're very similar, but yeah. Also they do make a good double feature because they do have a lot of similarities between them. Like, they're all horror story. It's an anthology that takes place on Halloween night in this small town. All the stories kind of happen at different times during the night. And also, like, even in minor characters kind of appear in different segments here and there. Also, it's very embraces Halloween, maybe not at the extent of Trick or Treat does, but it's still very much a full-blown Halloween film. But I guess for my first initial thoughts is I really enjoyed this one. I think all the segments are pretty solid. Some of them range from good to great. Like, there's no real bad segment in this entire film, at least for me. And also, like, being that most of the segments are pretty short, between, like, 5 to maybe 10 minutes long, like, pretty much even if there's one story that you're not really vibing with, I mean, it's over so quickly that you're on to the next one. And I like that how each of the stories are all individual. Like, again, having different directors and writers work on each story definitely gives each one their own distinctive flavor. And I just think they're a lot of fun. And there's definitely a lot of strong segments in this one that I really enjoyed. And also, like, having all the cameos and roles from everyone, whether they're well-known horror actors or well-known names or future stars as well. Like, every single one is pretty solid. And I just enjoyed them all. And yeah, I had a blast revisiting this one again for this episode of the show.
Yeah, like you said, there's a lot of similarities between the two. So kind of watching them close together actually made for like a really cool viewing. And I noticed a few similarities as well. So yeah, it was pretty cool. Marcus, what are your initial thoughts of Tales of Halloween?
Well, you know, it's interesting you guys say that this makes a great double feature, because, you know, I agree it does. Though I feel like Tales of Halloween is like Jeannie Bueller to Trick or Treat's Ferris Bueller. You know, like it's a great movie, but there's quite a few flaws in it when it comes to its presentation, how it breaks up a lot of the segments and everything like that. But a lot of them do work. I'm not saying it's a bad movie. I mean, but considering it's such a jam-packed movie, you know, we get 10 stories with 11 directors and, you know, just a huge assortment of like recognizable like horror legends and people that you go, oh wait, yeah, I recognize that person, you know, from this, you know actors and actresses. You know, it's odd because it's kind of disappointing how this film didn't really accumulate the following that Trick or Treat did, considering it's just there's like a lot more going on in it. But I think it's just because half of it is fantastic and the other half is kind of rather disposable. But I don't really blame the shorts themselves. I just think because there's so many of them, like a lot of them didn't really get a chance to like breathe the right way or just lay out their events a bit more evenly. But, you know, I it does carry a very wry charm to it, you know, even some of the, you know, inept, you know, entries, and without really that much of a, like a cohesive connectivity, you know, it's still a great film that does have a lot going on for it, even if some of it's a little misplaced.
Definitely. But Marcy, your thoughts.
Yeah, look, I quite enjoyed this. I had seen it before. I think you had it as a recommendation for me, mm-hmm. Bede, for 31 Days of Horror a few years ago. And I enjoyed it then. I enjoyed it now. I think this time, though, I noticed just how mean-spirited a lot of it is. And I don't necessarily think that's a bad thing because of the tone and how most of this goes. It is more of a traditional horror anthology with different directors for different segments, a little bit of a wraparound. And also, yeah, like we said, doing the trick-or-treat thing, it's the same town, same night kind of thing. And you do see a few little other bits and pieces popping up from segment to segment. So each segment does have its own look and feel, which I always find interesting. They do feel a little short. Some probably could have been expanded a bit more. Some probably were just at the right length. But I enjoyed it. It can be very silly. And it just felt like a bunch of people wanted to get together to make something about Halloween and horror, and they just had fun doing it. And yeah, I don't really like have too many complaints about it. I think considering there's 10 segments in a film that's just, I think, slightly over an hour and a half, I think they did a pretty good job. And I guess like your personal enjoyment of horror anthologies, or if you can watch, I guess, shorter stories will kind of impact how you view this film. But for me, like, I enjoyed it for what it is. And some segments I do like better than others, but I still think they're all pretty solid in their own way. With 10 segments, we don't necessarily have to talk about all of them, but perhaps we could talk about the ones that we really liked. Bede, what is one that you really liked?
One of the ones that stands out to me, the segment Trick by Adam Gersh, I apologize if you're listening to this podcast right now. This one in particular, I really liked because, once again, Night of the Living Dead is playing on the TV screen, which is...
Night of the Living Dead shows up in a lot of the segments on the TV. Yeah.
It does.
Very prominently.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. I mean, and it's not because that I host my own solo podcast called Bede vs. the Living Dead, which is the podcast on all the different remakes, re-edits, reimaginings, and so on and so forth of Night of the Living Dead, which you can listen on all podcast streaming services everywhere. Now, with that plug out of the way,
how dare you?
This is like the fourth horror film I've watched in the last 4 weeks that is like last few weeks that has had Night of the Living Dead playing somewhere on a TV. So it's like, which is very funny for me, but I like how it's even woven into this story as well with certain bits. But what I really enjoyed most about this one is basically the biggest name out of the cast in this section, of course, is Tiffany Shepherds, who's also, you know, a screen queen, so she's one of the actors here. And it's basically a bunch of friends who are hanging out watching Night of the Living Dead on TV, and every now and again trick-or-treaters come in at knock on the door. But then they open up the door to a group of kids, and the kids attack them, like full-blown attack and kill most of them. And I actually was kind of taken aback by first, not because of the kids like killing these adults, but when we first introduced to the first kid, who I honestly thought it was the little girl from Trick or Treat, because
I
the costume was exactly
too.
The same.
It looked exactly like her.
She had the same hat, same, like, even the glasses. I honestly thought, is this the same actress? Is this like a little callback? But then I thought, you know what? It wouldn't be that, because that movie came out, like, was made around 2006-7. She's probably a lot older by the time this movie came out. So maybe it could have been just a reference for all we know. But then again, maybe witches costumes just look similar, but it just looked way too similar. It can't be a coincidence. But that being said, though, we see these kids going around and murdering these adults. And at first we're like terrified for these adults, because these kids are incredibly vicious, at whether they're stabbing or and everything to these adults. But then the twist comes in, which I actually, even though I'd seen this movie before, I was caught off by this twist again, where we find out while one of the adults is hiding, the last of them, she's going through her phone, and we realize that all four of these friends are actually killers themselves, and they kidnap kids and murder and torture them. So it's actually the kids who are really the heroes of this story, and they're the ones who are going to this house to free whatever kids are still alive, and also to take revenge on the adults. And I thought it was such a great twist that again makes you look back on everything with this segment.
Yeah, no, it does it well, because I too had forgotten what the twist was, and I'm like, oh yeah. And this is the case where I'm like, you know what, kids, good for you. You should be doing that. Because those adults are fucking horrendous. But yeah, no, it's a very different segment. And I think this is one where they had the right amount of time to just tell this little creepy story.
And the title of it works well with the story as well, because it's just simply Trick. So it's basically, in a way, kind of tricking the audience to thinking one way, but then taking the rug right out under us.
Yeah. Marcus, any thoughts on this segment?
Yeah, I definitely agree. It's definitely one of the best ones, especially with the twist and the amount of, like, you know, blood and gore and everything that's going on here. It reminded me of, like, kind of a reverse, like, Eden Lake and maybe even Ills, you know, or them if you're over here in America. But it was really good. I liked the callback to, because I thought the same thing. I'm like, is that the same girl from Trick or Treat? Like, are these connecting now? But definitely laughed at the fact that they're watching Night of the Living Dead. I thought of you, Beat. I really did, not gonna lie.
Me too.
I was like, Beat is gonna love this one, you know. I liked the fact that it's very vicious, and rightfully so. You know, once we get that twist, you know, we're like, oh, okay, yeah, go ahead, do your thing. You know, let these little kids cook. And I enjoyed it for its almost unassuming nature, because when we first get introduced to these characters, they're really just hanging out, which of course proves how freaking fucking psychotic they are. They're just literally hanging out, watching a movie, handing out treats to kids, and there's a kid downstairs with her eye taken out, you know? So it's definitely one of those shorts that makes the most of its time, makes the most of its, you know, its cast, makes the most of its premise, makes the most of its gore, makes the most of its references. It's basically, I would say it's definitely a perfect one based on, you know, this anthology and probably others as well.
Marcus, is there a particular segment that you really liked that we can discuss?
Well, actually, I think it would be Trick, but I'll go to my second favorite. I definitely got a kick out of the night Billy raised hell.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because first off, we have Barry Boswick from Spin City in there, you know, and I used to love Spin City. That was like one of my favorite shows.
Yeah, so, same.
You know, seeing him pop up, I'm like, oh, okay, cool, you know, and even though they made like a weird like focus on like Adrian Curry from America's Next Top Model, I thought it was interesting that they kind of inserted her into this. But the bad thing about it is they didn't kill her, but, you know, whatever. but no, I really enjoyed that one because of just how despicable it is. Mm. Like, it's one of those kind of shorts, kind of those kind of stories that creates the illusion of it being very fun. Mm. But really, underneath it all, it's very fucked up in a lot of ways. Because this little kid literally gets like replaced by a freaking demon. The demon runs around doing all these pranks, doing all this fucked up stuff, and then switches back with the kid. And then the kid gets shot by the police because he peed on himself. Like, what the fuck?
They laughed so hard that the kid peed himself, they accidentally just let the guns loose. Like,
they literally like just shot him because he peed. Like,
impression you get. Like, obviously, like, they framed this little kid as doing all these horrible things, but that's not why they shoot him. He pees himself and then gets shot.
And they just shoot him. I'm like, what the fuck? Like, first of all, even if he did commit all these quote unquote crimes, which, you know, he's still a child and he had his hands up and he peed and they shot him. Like, one of the most fucked up things in this entire film that had absolutely nothing to do with anything supernatural, nothing to do with anything otherworldly, just good old fashioned fucked up cops. So,
yeah, it's just trigger happy cops shooting kids. What else is new?
But I also love the fact that the cops, who do appear quite a number of times throughout the film, are played by director Adam Green and actor Graham Skipper. So I find that kind of hilarious as well.
One thing that just made me laugh with this segment, like, it is so obvious when they're going around town, it's not the kid in the costume. You can tell.
No.
It's not the kid at all. And it just makes me laugh. Because it is so over the top, but it just works, and it is so cruel and vicious. And by the end, you're like, wow, that was really mean. Like, what a horrible prank. Oh, the kid's dead. Damn.
What's so fucked up about it, even more so, is that the kid didn't even want to prank anyone. Like, he literally, like, his sister and her ridiculous boyfriend or whatever is literally making fun of him for not pranking anyone. And the only thing he wants to do is just get some candy. And then it's like, hey, can I get some, you know, hey, trick or treat? Oh, what? Kidnapped, framed, killed.
And he also didn't want to be known as the kid that pissed his pants, and he pissed his pants.
No.
Yeah. Like, it is a very mean-spirited segment, but it is hilarious and a lot of fun. And Barry Boswick is having way too much fun role.
Yeah. He's great. And he just, because he's just so into it and having fun, it just works so much better.
Agree. But Marcy, is there a segment that stands out to you from the film?
Yeah, look, there's some, like, I think they're all worth discussing in one way or another, but we don't want people to sit here for 12 hours. One that does stand out for me is the Ransom of Rusty Rex. And this one just made me piss myself so much, like piss myself laughing in a metaphorical sense, not a literal sense. I did not piss my pants laughing this time. Mm. Just to clarify, I'm not Marcy piss her pants. I'm just calling back to poor Billy who peed his pants poor and Billy. Died. this is definitely more of just like a really insane, stupid kind of horror comedy. And you have like these criminals, and they're like, okay, so there's a millionaire in the town. he's got a son. We're going to kidnap the son and get ransom. So they kidnap what they assume is the son, take him back to like their warehouse or whatever it is. They call the dad, who's played by John Landis. And I've made my thoughts on John Landis very clear in the past on this show. So I'm just going to leave it at that. And he's like, oh, yeah, we've got your kid. We want the money. He's like, yeah, nah, whatever, you keep him. And you, they're like, what? Why is he hanging up on me? We kidnapped his kid. And you find out it's not actually his kid. It's some kind of just gremlin-ish creature that once you have him, he's not going to go away. So it's kind of like, I guess, I'm guessing because we had the John Landis bit in there, it harkens back to like the Twilight Zone, one of the most famous stories that they did end up putting in that movie, which we will not discuss, with like the gremlin thing on the side of the plane. And it just causes chaos. It's kind of like that, but obviously other people can see it. So these two, like, criminals are just fucked because the guy doesn't want it back. They don't know what to do with this little gremlin thing. And the one warning that they're given is like, well, you better feed him because he will eat. And we find out by the end, he's going to eat you if you don't feed him yourself. And he won't go away. They try to, like, drown it, like, mafia style. Nah, he comes back. And I just think, like, those two main performances, I just gotta go find my cast list.
Sam Witwer,
who I think's a great actor, I adore him, and Jose Pablo Cantillo, they're the two like criminals. Like, they just go off each other so hilariously as all this shit is going down, and then when Sam Witwer like comes back with some food and stuff and turns around and the gremlin thing is like eating the other guy and is just feasting on his head. And it's just so funny. Like, when he calls back like the John Landis character and he's like, that thing held us hostage. It's like, well, you done fucked up. And it also reminds me of like, I don't know if it's like a saying, but something we stupidly say, like, oh, if I ever got kidnapped, they'd be paying you instead of you paying them to hand me back because I'd be such a little shit. And that's what it reminded me of. And I just thought it was so fucking funny. It really made me laugh. I will shut up about that. Do you guys have any thoughts on this segment?
Well, I got to say, Marcy, like, I like to imagine that Rusty Rex is actually Max Landis, but that's beside the point.
I mean, you could make that joke.
Yes. That's why John Landis wanted to get rid of his.
He wanted to get rid of his problematic kid.
Exactly. But yeah, I enjoyed this segment as well. It's definitely one of, out of like, every single segment has a lot of humor in it, but this one definitely is the funniest out of all of them, especially with Sam Witwer and Jose Pablo Cantillo's like performances as these criminals who are in over their heads. And just like, they're basically by the end of it, once when they seemingly think they get rid of like Rusty Rex, they're basically like, oh, well, we're not kidnapping anymore and stuff like that. And it is a fun segment, and yeah, it is a really good one. I enjoyed this one a lot. And
me too. It's funny because, you know, whenever you have Sam Witwer in pretty much anything, he's like extremely good. He brings such a like an intensity to pretty much every role he's in. And it was interesting to pretty much see him in something like this, just kind of like he brings a lot of that intensity out, you know, especially when he's cursing, like, what the fuck, you know, and everything like that. So him and Jose have great chemistry and they play off of each other extremely well, you know, but it's great seeing him in something like this because it reminded me of Being Human. And that was one of my favorite shows because of him. So, you know, seeing him kind of come back to a little bit of horror and comedy, and it still fits him so well. If he ever puts down the lightsabers and, you know, decides to, you know, do something else, he still has a great sense of comedic timing and chemistry with others and everything and something like this, because he really made it work for me along with Jose. Not so much Landis, but, you know, definitely those two. Just Yeah, it still makes me laugh thinking about it. So yeah, I definitely enjoy this one.
It's just batshit crazy. I do want to like at least be able to mention and stuff other segments. One that just caught me off guard, and it just is so stupid that I kind of liked it, is Friday the 31st, where you have a yes. Jason Voorhees-style serial killer who's hunting down a girl dressed as Dorothy. But then, like, the UFO shows up, and I can't even explain it. It just goes stupid, and I gotta give him credit. It's so silly. It's so far-fetched and over the top, but it was entertaining, and I laughed.
That, I enjoyed that segment too, because it's basically like Friday the 13th meets Evil Dead.
Yeah, a little bit, yeah.
And I love good genre mashups, so that one I really particularly enjoy, especially with that cute little stop-motion little alien creature.
I know.
He just wants candy, and that's all he wanted.
He just wanted a trick or treat. And by the end, with like her possessed body with the alien and like the killer, and they're just like dropping off each other's limbs. It's just,
yes.
It made me laugh at just how over the top silly it was.
Indeed. One segment I definitely want to talk about, like, I guess this would be like my honorable mention segment. Mm. And I would say out of all the segments, this is definitely, we found it at the darkest one, and that is the one Ding Dong by Lucky McKee, which is about like a couple. She wants to have a baby, he's unsure, and the husband sees her as like this monster. And it also has a lot of Hansel and Gretel kind of elements in there as well. But I also find it just an interesting segment that kind of looks at an abusive relationship, essentially. And we find that at the end of this segment, like, she wants to have a child, like, and that's why she is always upset and angry and lashes out at him. And then basically he says, like, he doesn't feel like they can't bring a child into this relationship. So he basically, like, what's the word I'm thinking of?
He has a vasectomy?
The vasectomy. That's the one I was thinking of. And she doesn't take it very well, but it's a very, out of all the segments, it's definitely the darkest one.
It's very dark. It's got this, I will say, it very much has that Lucky McKee feel.
Mm.
Very much. Mm. And Pollyanna McIntosh?
Yes.
Oh my God, she's gorgeous, but she just owns every second. And I guess her character's kind of like a witch in a way. Like, it really lays in heavily with this Hansel and Gretel kind of theme. But I think what really works for me is just on that visual level, it's very striking. And just, again, like, her performance is really good. But like I said, it's very dark as well. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Marcus, was there any other segments you wanted to discuss?
No, I can discuss Ding Dong too. I mean, I've always been a fan of Pollyanna McIntosh, like, since her, you know, Walking Dead days as Jadis. And even, I think, even before that with Let Us Pray. So seeing her pretty much pop up on this, and again, another treat, you know, everything in this particular segment is just hard hitting. You know, you said striking, very striking. Great makeup, effects, performances. From both our players here. I mean, Pollyanna really, like, cements this, because she is equal parts, like, just terrifying, but also kind of sympathetic and very just sweet, almost, in a way, weirdly. I mean, I hate to say it like that, but it's kind of true, you know? Like, like you kind of want her to get what she wants, but even though you know it's going to be bad. But then you're just like, no, you don't really need to do that, considering how you're treating this poor guy, you know. But she delivers this performance with such kind of a, almost like a yearning, or in like a, probably saying the wrong word, but an earnestness, you know, to it, that it really just kind of brings you in a little bit, you know. Like, you could easily just look at her as just this, like, evil, you know, monster who just wants to have a baby and destroy that child. Like, she's destroying her relationship. But you also, like, see why she kind of wants that, because she wants to be able to have, like, a part of herself go on. And I don't know, maybe I'm diving too much into it, but it just kind of felt like that, because, you know, Pollyanna, you know, brings such a great performance to it. And it almost ended too fast for me. Like, I wanted more. That's one of the ones where I wanted to go on more, because I wanted to see a lot more of what was gonna play out. And once it, you know, it did end the way I knew it was going to, but it was good with what we got. So yeah, definitely one of the better ones.
The other one I just wanted to briefly mention was This Means War.
Yes.
Which has James Duvall as, like, I guess, across the road neighbor who's like this rock guy and just sets up like this really gruesome Halloween display, but the guy across the road's like, fuck this, mine's better, and it just goes batshit insane. Like, it's a shorter one. It's over the top, but you kind of think people are probably really like this.
Yeah.
Like, overly competitive about their bloody yard displays. Like, calm down.
I enjoyed this segment too. It's a lot of fun. And, like, it's definitely the least horror out of all the segments, but it works because of the end, because they're fighting so hard until eventually, to a point, they basically accidentally impale each other as, like, the whole neighborhood and everyone's, like, egging them on to keep fighting and fighting. And I was actually going to bring up this segment at one point, Marcy, because you have met James Duvall in real life. So
I have, and he was wonderful.
Yes. I guess one segment that I also really enjoyed was the first segment, Sweet Tooth. And I forgot Robert Russler from...
Yes, I'm like, oh yeah, Robert Russler is, like, shown in this one.
Yeah, and also Caroline Williams from Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2. And I like this, again, it's another, like, you know, Halloween-esque kind of story, similar to the, like, some of the ones from Trick or Treat, with this, like, this entity called Sweet Tooth. And I thought that one was a lot of fun, but also quite gory.
It is very gory, but it was well done. I think it's an interesting little twist on kind of an urban legend tale, but also a good way to open the movie as well.
And also just the cameos that are in this movie. Like, there's so many cameos. Like even people like, you know, Mick Garris, Stuart Gordon, Joe Dante, Greg McLean, and like many others, like, make cameos. And also even like Neil Marshall's segment, The Bad Seed, which is definitely the one they like, every time it finishes, I'm like, oh, I want to see more of this.
it's I love how that one ends, because you just see all the pumpkins with Joe Dante, but it's just an insane little one. And it's just, I feel like, you know, pumpkins are so associated with Halloween. Why not have killer pumpkins?
Exactly. Yeah. And also, Drew Struzan also makes a cameo in this segment as well.
I feel like everybody makes a cameo, like, throughout this entire film. Like, it's fun. Like, at one point, I think we see Felissa Rose a few times as well. Mm-hmm. Like, there's so many. There's, like, way too many to even, like, name, because there's just so many. But like I said, the whole film just feels like, you know, a group of people just wanted to get together to make something fun, horror, and Halloween-y. And I guess, like, in watching it, a lot of the stories kind of had, like, a revenge theme, but just also very mean-spirited for a lot of it. And I think because it takes a certain vibe and edge with having a things be kind of comedic as well, like, I think it all kind of worked together, and I just found myself, like, enjoying this film again. And I probably did notice a few more things than I did last time when I first watched it, but yeah, I felt the same with it. So yeah. And yeah, so final thoughts and rating out of 5 for Tales of Halloween. Beat.
Yeah, I really enjoyed this one a lot. I give it about a 4 out of 5. Like, it's definitely one of the few horror anthology films where I feel like a lot of the stories are pretty solid. Like, there's definitely some great ones there. We managed to talk about them for this episode, but there's no real outright bad one, in my opinion. Like, even if the lesser ones are still pretty interesting in their own way, and you can definitely tell that this was made with a lot of love and everyone was having a blast making it. I mean, hence with all the filmmakers, all the actors, and just even bring in legendary horror filmmakers to do cameos. And all the stories are a lot of fun. Like, again, like Trick or Treat, it definitely sets out to be a fun representation of Halloween itself. And I think it does a good job at that. So yeah, 4 out of 5 for me.
Awesome. And Marcus?
Despite it not having that much of an alluring, you know, over encompassing narrative, it's still a good film. I mean, it's definitely a All Hallows Eve film. It's very appropriate for the season. You get, like, you know, you guys were talking about, I was thinking about all the cameos too, but way too many to list. way too many. It has everything that's indicative of the season, of the tradition of, you know, Halloween, of stuff that's come before. I mean, we have a lot of Night of Living Dead love in this movie. So
definitely,
you know, and everything is basically on, you know, different sides of the spectrum as far as like production and quality and everything like that. They do a lot of great things with the makeup and the effects and the sounds. Oh my God, the sound effects. You know, even though we do have, it's a little overpacked at times, considering, you know, I feel like this film probably should have been a little bit longer to add a little bit more time to some of the segments so that we can get a little bit more fleshing out. But, you know, it's not a bad anthology, you know, film by any means. It's deranged and violent and fun and quirky. And there's so many parts in it that just work. Even some of the parts that don't work, they still work, which is odd. But that's just one of the things that you kind of get with anthology, you know, films. You know, even when some stuff doesn't work, if the overall film is good or decent, it carries over to everything else. And that's definitely what this one is. I really do feel like it should have really gotten much more of a following along with Trick or Treat. So it's kind of perplexing that it kind of didn't. Like, before you guys told me about this podcast, I completely forgot about Tales of Halloween. Like, I was like, wait, which one's that one? I had never really heard of it. Even though it has all these strong players and cameos and directors and everything like that. So it's a very perplexing thing that this just didn't reach that level that Trick or Treat has. That's why I compared it, you know, to, you know, Ferris and Genie. And it may not, but I'll say this, even though they may be in different levels, they're still a part of the same Halloween family. And this one still does work. It has a lot going for it. So I'll give it a 3.5 out of 5.
And Marcy.
And me. Yeah, I also give it 3.5 out of 5. I think just overall, it's quite an enjoyable horror anthology. I think, yeah, it can feel a little overpacked, but I think they did their best with to try and get these stories told within the time frame and make them memorable. I don't think there is a bad segment out of them. I think they all have their merits. I think maybe, at least for me, the weakest ones were probably The Weak and The Wicked and The Grinning Ghost. And I think The Weak and The Wicked, it just took me out of it when we see like these little like 10-year-old little shits burning someone's fucking caravan with people inside. And apparently there's no repercussions. They're still terrorizing the town years later. That kind of was just like, what the fuck is this? But they get what's coming to them, so that worked fine. And I think the grim grinning ghost, it's got a great little setup at the start because we have like Lynn Shay and we get some of those other cameos. But I think as it goes on, I don't think it quite gets to a very satisfying ending, but I think they had some good ideas through it, and I still enjoyed watching it. But yeah, if you haven't seen this one and you just want something that you can just breeze through, I'd say this one's a great one to just sit and watch for the season as well.
Nice.
And yeah, that wraps up this 25th installment of Podcasters of Horror. You can find the Super Network at supermarcy.com. And if you want to find more on Podcasters of Horror, you can find us on your podcast streaming platforms by searching up Podcasters of Horror. And you can always check out the Super Network link tree for all the extra links to our socials and the main big podcast feed if you want to get all the shows on your feed as well. And I can be found at Super Marcy on most social media platforms as well. Beat.
Well, if people want to find me on all social medias everywhere, you can find me at Twitter at twitter.com/BeatJermaine. You can also find me at Blue Sky as well under BeatJermaine as well. And also you can find all my work over at supermarcy.com, and you can follow my two podcasts, my solo one, Bead versus the Living Dead, at twitter.com/BeadVSTLD. And you can also find it at Blue Sky under that handle as well. And you can listen to the podcast and all podcast streaming services everywhere, and as well as listen to the spinoff podcast to that show, which I host with our mutual friend Marcy, Stephen T. Bolt, which of course is Bead and Steve versus Camp Crystal Lake. So that's on the Bead versus the Living Dead podcast feed, so that's easy to find and listen to as well.
And Marcus?
Well, you can find me on Facebook and Letterboxd, Marcus Wilturner, and you can also find me on Twitter and Instagram at Ego Critic Demise. And of course you can find me on the Super Network contributing to you guys's fine website with my reviews and musings. And of course you can find me on Bead versus the Living Dead, because I keep going back to that.
Indeed. Well, you're on the most recent episode, Marcus, which we talked about, Return of the Living Dead Part 2,
and it's a great listen to. I really enjoyed you, Marcus, and Bead and Pat, just kind of dissecting that film and just some of the observations. It was very entertaining. So highly recommend you check out all of our stuff because we're amazing. And yes, we will hopefully catch you in a month or two with another episode of Podcasters of Horror. So stay tuned. And until next time, I've been Super Marcy. He's been Bead. He's been Marcus. And we are the Super Network. Bye-bye.
See you, everyone. Bye.
Super Network is proudly sponsored by Surfshark VPN. Why would you have a VPN in this day and age? Well, a lot of people are quite concerned about tracking and their online privacy, and using a VPN ensures that you are safe and secure online. Surfshark VPN provides a lot of extra added layers of security, as well as ad blocker and a kill switch if your information is ever compromised. A great bonus feature with having Surfshark is something is not available on your streaming service in your country. You just pop on that Surfshark VPN and you can probably find so much more streaming in different countries. If you want to find something like Masters of Horror, it is available on Tubi, so just select the correct country and you'll be able to watch such a great and fantastic show. Surfshark VPN is one of the most reliable and cheapest of the VPNs out there, with up to 81% off offer when you subscribe for 24 months. please use the link surfshark.deals/supernetwork to take advantage of this amazing deal.
You can also find the link in the show notes.
Thank you, Surfshark. Surfy shark, do 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 do. Surfy shark, do 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 do.
And now back to the show.